the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto-related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Few people seem to have noticed, but Africa's cell phone moment arrived in the financial world when stablecoins all of a sudden appeared about 6-7 years ago. What that did is very similar to the kind of technological leap that cell phones did. Cell phones made information available to everybody pretty much instantly wherever you were in Africa. If you've been in the fields of Ghana and the gold fields of Ghana, you find out that the people who are mining there, they know the gold price from one minute to the next. Well, what will stablecoins do that is so revolutionary around Africa? A few years ago, people were using it for hedging against weak local currencies, but the use cases have multiplied since then, where now you've got people settling invoices for imports. You've got people remitting currencies from abroad at very, very low cost, 24/7, very efficient, all based on the blockchain. The big problem that we face in Africa is how do you filter that down to the micro level, to the street trader? How do you get to pay them in stable coins or in crypto? Well, one person who's been keeping an eye on this is Nzuli Chitembo, founder of Riskblock, which is Moody's for the crypto world. And he's also a CTO in residence at Enza Capital, spelled E-N-Z-A. That's a venture capital fund investing in tech-enabled businesses across the continent. Welcome to you, Nzuli, and thanks very much for joining us. We did speak once before, and I think a lot has happened in your world since we did speak. So maybe bring us up to date. I'm particularly keen, because you're investing across Africa, this question of how do you get stable coins into the hands of the street hawker, the ordinary people in Africa? Is there any technology that's moving in that direction?
No, thank you so much. And it's great to connect once again. And this question that you have of how to get stable coins in the hands of the man on the street, it's a very, very interesting question. And there are some specific players who are trying by all means to answer this specific question. And how they are going about it, which is more so the prevalent approach, is how to leverage payment methods that are very popular already and almost build the infrastructure behind those payment rails. So I'll give an example. In most of our economies on the continent, you'll find that quite a number of people leverage mobile payments in order to transact. And that is quite popular, either through USSD or just SMS or some other more so way of actually transacting, leveraging mobile payments. There are quite a number of players who are now zoning in on bridging the gap, if you can put it that way, of making it possible for one to leverage USSD as if they are doing a mobile payment, and then creating these virtual digital asset wallets in the back end that have exposure to assets such as USSDC, USSDT, to actually allow the man on the street to be able to gain exposure and play a part in the digital asset economy.
Right. Now, the last time we spoke, we were talking to you about Riskblock, which, as I mentioned in the introduction, is really a kind of a Moody's for the crypto space. So but maybe just quickly tell us about Riskblock, what it does. This is really part of the evolving frontier of the crypto space where you need people to get some clarity and certainty. Are they transacting with trusted partners when they're dealing with crypto? Am I correct in phrasing it in that way?
Yes. So at Riskblock, one of the key areas of development when it comes to digital assets that we focused on was more so having institutional players coming into this space and being able to properly evaluate the risk posture of any digital asset and then incorporate that risk posture into their wider portfolios. And this for us has been quite a quest, if I can put it that way. We were quite early to the party, if I can put it that way, where we quickly realized, firstly, that regulation was a critical player for institutional players to be able to get comfortable in having digital assets. But once regulation came into play, specifically here in South Africa, we quickly realized that there was also a gap when it came to infrastructure. When I specifically speak to infrastructure, I'm not talking about the blockchain technology itself, but infrastructure that is acceptable to institutional players in order for them to be able to hold digital assets within their assets that are within their purview. So that was one of the more so key hurdles that we started realizing when it comes to institutional players actually being able to be comfortable with some of the risk aspects that come to play with this new way of holding value.
Maybe just talk about some of the ways that you do assess risk when it comes to digital assets. We're very familiar, you know, with the Moody's. I wouldn't say we're familiar with the methodology, but we do trust that they've put in a good bit of work into whatever grade of creditworthiness that they apply to an entity. How do you go about this?
Yeah, so it's a mix of traditional methodologies of evaluating any asset risk, but also an incorporation of some of the new characteristics of digital assets. So when we speak about traditional ways of actually evaluating the assets, we look at, for instance, volatility over a specific period of time. As you are aware, digital assets such as Bitcoin, Ethereum, and the like, they are some of the most volatile assets around. And one has to really have a good appreciation of how volatile they are and what role they play within their portfolio in terms of incorporating that specific volatility. We also look at traditional aspects such as concentration of ownership. How easy is it for one player to be able to influence the pricing of an asset? So those are more so some of the traditional methods that we look at in terms of evaluating risk. But with digital assets, we then start looking at some of the key nuances. And these include the technology element. So you'll find that with most of these digital assets, there's actually a very strong technical component whereby you can find that there's a community and the technology itself evolves over time. And one has to be able to evaluate some of the new changes that are coming into that ecosystem and almost try to forecast what impact that will have on the asset itself. So what we do is we track different major changes that are coming through the pipeline and bring that awareness to an institutional player that actually is holding that asset within their books so that they can actually have an opportunity to reevaluate if they are willing to take up that risk or not in terms of holding the asset. We also work with other partners to actually evaluate the contracts that actually run these assets from a cybersecurity perspective. As you are aware, with AI, things are changing really fast. New exploits are being found. And we basically incorporate that cybersecurity posture when it comes to the digital asset. So those are some of the, I would say, the new characteristics from a risk perspective that come with holding a digital asset. So it's as I mentioned, it's a bit of a mix of the old ways of evaluating risk and the new ways, taking into cognizance the technology itself.
All right, let's talk about your other hat that you wear, which is the CTO. That's the Chief Technology Officer in residence at Enza Capital. You're doing, it's a venture capital fund. You're investing in tech businesses across the continent. The question I have for you, and this is something you're probably following, is are we seeing a lot of really inspiring kind of innovations across Africa which would allow, to answer the question I opened at the beginning, it would allow the street hawker to receive payment in crypto or in stablecoin?
No, it's a really interesting question. And I think one of the really promising developments is the continued maturity of regulation across the continent. So in South Africa specifically, we are seeing more so the continual evolution of the regulation that came into play that allowed for digital assets to be to form part of financial products from a definition perspective. And what we have seen is we are seeing players that are identifying unique payment corridors and then starting to leverage stable coins, for instance, to be able to cut costs from a transaction perspective in really substantial ways. One example is a player that we invested into that basically identified the corridor for tourism. So when one is in another country and they're trying to pay for a tour somewhere, you know, at a safari on the continent, the traditional methods tend to be quite pricey. But with the advent and the introduction of digital assets, specifically stable coins, those costs can be drastically reduced. And by bundling all those different transactions, they can save the operator of the tours substantial monies in terms of savings each and every year. So we are still seeing a focus on B2B type of opportunities, with the C component being almost invincible to the consumer who actually makes the payment, but with the infrastructure behind leveraging stable coins to actually bring about cost savings as well as efficiency from a speed payment perspective.
Maybe just cast your mind forward a few years from now, and where do you see stable coins as a tool of commerce in Africa? Are we going to see the street hawker with a wallet, very familiar with how to use the wallet, how to accept and how to make payments in stable coins and crypto? Or is that still something very, very distant in your mind?
I personally think that that reality is coming closer and closer to the man on the street. Why I say this is because we are starting to see even the major players from a payment rails perspective starting to take cognizance of stable coins and actually starting to use them themselves in order to take advantage of some of the advantages that come with this technology. In South Africa, I mean, I'm impressed by one of the players that is leveraging Bitcoin specifically to be able to pay at your local grocery. I think that is one method of being able to leverage digital assets from a day-to-day perspective. But I'm more so very, very interested in what potentially we can start seeing in the future, where mobile network operators running mobile payment platforms will start seeing the advantages of leveraging digital assets directly within their wallets, instead of having these new players, if I can put them that way, that are trying to bridge the gap. And I see this reality much closer than most people. If you have been noticing, just last week, we saw the launch of Zaru, which is an institutional grade stable coin for the South African rand, where we are seeing major banking entities, Web3 exchanges, technology partners, and even asset managers coming together to be able to provide a stable coin that is pegged to the South African rand. And this actually provides an opportunity for a mobile payment platform provider to be able to also introduce a stable coin within their wallets for their users. So we are getting closer and closer to that reality where when I go to buy some fuel, I'll be able to take out my wallet and be able to pay for my fuel using my digital asset wallet.
Right. I mean, I see M-Pesa, the Kenyan company, mobile money company. I think they've got about 66 million customers. They recently launched a project with ADI of Abu Dhabi where they will be able to offer and their customers will be able to spend stablecoins. To that point that you've just made, you see the mobile money groups that, who've already got a lot of infrastructure in place moving into the stablecoin space rather than people trying to bridge the gap between where we are now and the traditional legacy mobile money systems.
Yes. Yes, I think it's a natural evolution. They might not necessarily want to jump on the opportunity and be the first movers. However, because of the advantages that come with this technology, it's something that, in my view, is quite inevitable. And when we start looking beyond some of these use cases and start looking at where we are seeing AI developing and AI agents becoming quite popular, I think one of the key developments that I'm watching is more so how AI agents are popping up in WhatsApp conversations and groups and the like. And when you start having such developments and such interactions, one of the questions that comes about is, okay, you know, I've got an AI agent that's able to do 1, 2, 3 tasks for me. Can it be able to make a payment for me or do a transaction on my behalf? And this is where I'm envisioning a very interesting intersection where we are seeing AI agents looking for methods to be able to make fractional payments, you know, fractions of cents as they interact with one another. And we find the use case of leveraging digital assets being that a use case that will actually fulfill the tasks. So for instance, be it USDC, be it USDT, or even some of the local stable coins that are coming into play, and having this ecosystem where you have AI agents that belong to an individual, but being able to transact on that individual's behalf automatically.
Fantastic stuff. We are going to leave it there. Great discussion. And Nzuli, thank you very much for joining us on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.